Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, April 20th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Chris Coleman says racial equity is a major issue facing St. Paul, and are schools rigorous enough? The U.S. Supreme Court is hearing arguments today in a case about alcohol breath tests in Minnesota, Reham Fashir reports.
The case stems from a 2012 incident. A man named William Bernard Jr. and two others were trying to pull a boat out of the water when their truck got stuck. Court documents say Bernard admitted to police he'd been drinking, but denied driving the truck. But a witness told police Bernard was the driver. Officers arrested him on suspicion of driving under the influence. Police told Bernard it's a crime to refuse an alcohol breath test, but he declined anyway. Bernard was arrested and charged with driving while impaired. He argued in trial court that a breath test without a search warrant violates the Fourth Amendment. The district court agreed and dismissed the case, but the Minnesota Court of Appeals upheld the state law that makes it a crime to refuse an alcohol breath test without a search warrant. The case is in the highest court today. Reham Fashir, Minnesota Public Radio News.
St. Paul officials have named a new developer for the long-vacant downtown Macy's department store. Matt Sepik reports.
Dayton's first opened the store in 1963. Its successor, Macy's, pulled up stakes 3 years ago and left a half-million-square-foot concrete box in the middle of downtown. The St. Paul Port Authority, which owns it, has had a tough time finding developers, but yesterday it approved a $61 million deal with the Hempel Companies of Minneapolis. Port Authority President Lee Kruger says work could start as soon as next month.
The first thing we need to do is start an asbestos abatement project. Dayton's, I believe, about a dozen years ago, abated three of the five floors, so we still have a couple floors to abate.
Plans call for a Walgreens in the building and a Minnesota Wild practice rink on the top floor. Hempel says it plans to have the project finished by late next year. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman has sketched out some of the details of what he's planning through the end of his term, with an emphasis on racial equity. Coleman delivered his State of the City address yesterday at the Penumbra Theater and talked about his goals, as well as the deadly flurry of gun violence in the city this week. Tim Nelson has more.
Chris Coleman is mayor of a different city than the one he was elected to lead in 2005.
With our historic rise in population has come a dramatic change in our demographics.
He says people of color make up almost half of the city's population, compared to just under a third in 2009.
That change necessitates a focus on equity, so that our city is great for all who call St. Paul home.
That's what Coleman told several hundred people, including the entire city council, at his 11th State of the City address this afternoon. He said he was going to commit tax money to the effort that would make lasting change in St. Paul.
Our ultimate goal is that city employees reflect the community they serve. So as city employees retire, our goal is to increase full-time employment to 40% people of color. This will be incremental change in some ways. But by the end of 2017, I'm committed to ensuring 23% of the people working in city government will be people of color.
Coleman also highlighted St. Paul's Promise Neighborhood Initiative, begun in 2010, but without tens of millions of dollars in hoped-for federal education funding. The program now includes four city schools, up from the initial two. The program's meant to focus education, healthcare, and other services to help youth in some of the city's most impoverished neighborhoods and help close the achievement gap. The mayor said he would also be proposing changes to the ordinance that governs the city's Police Civilian Internal Affairs Review Commission. Critics say the commission too often favors police. Coleman said he wants to clarify the role of police officers and civilians on the board this summer, although he wouldn't elaborate on the plan. Coleman's remarks got a largely warm reception, although they met with some skepticism. 20-year city council member Dan Bostrom said Coleman's 23% diversity hiring goal needs to be tempered with good recruiting practices.
That's a nice target. Those are sometimes very aggressive, and maybe you have to be aggressive, but in some of these positions you just can't find these people off the street to do this kind of stuff. It's a slow, arduous process.
But Black Lives Matter St. Paul organizer Rashad Turner said the transformation needs to happen more quickly. He also attended Coleman's speech.
And I'm looking forward to helping him achieve those goals that he set, but also pushing him to understand that, you know, we need to do more And we can do it a lot faster if we do it together and with the right people in leadership.
The mayor also said he planned to make a joint statement with Police Chief Tom Smith and leaders in the African-American community, calling for an end to the shootings that have wounded 9 people this week, 2 of them fatally. The city is also planning a rally and dinner Thursday evening in Mounds Park, site of a fatal shooting of an 18-year-old on Sunday. Covering politics, I'm Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A push in some Minnesota high schools to help every student succeed is prompting some teachers to ask, is school hard enough? As schools try to close the achievement gap, some educators worry that a shift to less rigorous grading standards isn't preparing their students for college or the workplace. Laura Ewan has the story.
Bloomington Kennedy High School has steadily improved its graduation rates over the years. It's a place where most of the students are kids of color and come from low-income backgrounds. The students in John Anderson's Advanced Placement U.S. History class are about to take a big test.
All right, here we go. Clear your desk, everything but a pencil. You need
but
a
as
pencil
Anderson
first,
passes out the bubble sheets and questions, first. Listen carefully to his instructions.
These scores will be graded today. You will get them back on Friday. At that point, you'll have 1 week to do your test corrections to fix the answers that you got wrong.
You heard it right. The students have a chance to take their graded tests home to fix the wrong answers. Anderson will give them partial credit if they get the answers right the second time around. He knows it sounds crazy. At first, he thought it was crazy too, but he says he's come to realize how much pressure some of his kids are under.
We have kids who are struggling for food to eat. We have kids who are working to help pay their rent for their family, and they have so much more going on in their lives than their U.S. history exam.
Anderson says he now sees that his most important job is to teach his kids history, and by allowing students to retake tests, he says they'll go back and relearn the stuff they missed. But some of his colleagues aren't so sure.
Well, personally, I don't like it.
That's science teacher David Doty. He's been teaching for 21 years. His department has fought back against the idea of retakes, and many science teachers at Kennedy don't allow them at all. Doty says some students still angle for a do-over, even before they've answered a single test question.
It suggests to me that it's looked at in a real irresponsible or immature way that I'm not going to study because that's work.
Education experts wouldn't argue that kids can be irresponsible about doing their work, but they need adults in their lives to push them along. And if a student's parents have never finished high school or are new to the country, sometimes the kids are left to figure out school on their own. That's how Kennedy senior Mariana Camacho Castillo sees it.
They just don't have someone like to care for them and to look out for them and keep pointing them like, go this way, go this way, fight for your dreams. Instead, they don't have anybody, so they're like, well, might as well not do anything. And that's what I feel like.
Mariana got support through a student advocate at Kennedy, as well as an older sister who helped raise her while their mom went back to Mexico for a while. But teachers can show support, too. English teacher Catherine Haddad says giving students second chances often creates more work for the teacher, but she says the changes are for the better.
I think the kids also feel that way, too, that it's not like, oh, my God, I'm not going to pass anyways. I'm not going to graduate. I'm just going to drop out. That's it. And then I don't know how many of those people would ever go back and get a high school diploma. And a high school diploma is not that much of a ticket to a fantastic future. But without a high school diploma, it seems really bleak.
Still, other teachers worry that in a culture of second chances for students, they're not preparing their kids for college. More than a fifth of Minnesota high school graduates go on to take remedial courses once they get to college. The rates are much higher for students of color. Covering education, I'm Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News, Bloomington.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.